wants to sit up here?
Corrections bill.
I already have a pen out. I see there's one in the folder here.
Good afternoon and welcome to the Senate Environment, Energy and Natural Resources Budget Division. Today's Tuesday, February 16th, and it's about 5 minutes to 1 o'clock. Today, we are dealing with Senate File 2462, authored by Senator Ellen Anderson.
Thank you very much, Mr. Chair, and thank you, members, for getting here quickly. And if you need to eat your lunch, you can just, you know, come in and join us and eat at the table, but we're happy to have everyone here so we have a quorum present. Do we have a quorum yet? We're close. Anyway, I'll start talking. I'm sure we will have one shortly. Mr. Chair, this is the Legislative Citizens Commission on Minnesota Resources annual appropriations bill, but still annual, although that will be changing next year. And so the total appropriation that we have available for us is just over $26 million for this year. And members, you should have some information in front of you, a pie chart handout. I believe everyone has that. And then a longer sheet that is kind of a quick summary of the categories of funding. And then you should have also, they have this too, I think, right? Several page legal size document that gives a very brief description of each of the projects that we funded. So I'm going to go through that quickly and just give you some kind of overview information about how we allocated the dollars in our recommendations this year, and then we have an amendment just to make some technical corrections to the bill. But let me start by
Senator, let's say there's a quorum present now.
Thank you very much, Mr. Chair. And let me start by acknowledging the members of the LCCMR in the Senate, who are myself, Senator Vickerman, who I know is here, who is our chair, Senate chair. There's a tri-chair so that there's a Senate chair. There he is. House chair and a citizen member chair. And the citizen chair is Nancy Gibson, who is also here with us today. We appreciate her attendance at the meeting today. And we also have Senator Fredrickson, long-serving member of the commission, Senator Parisseau, and Senator Chaudhry, who is all of whom are obviously on this committee. Myself, that's five, right? And so we all work together with the process of many, many hours after putting together an RFP, many hours of hearings. And I believe that this year we did have the largest number of requests in recent history in terms of dollar amounts and numbers of projects. So we had a very difficult job to winnow down those proposals. And I think what you see in front of you is the best of the best. And we made some very tough decisions and put together a great package that we want to recommend to the legislature for appropriation in this bill. And just to tell you some of the kind of general categories of information, I think that's useful. If you look at the first long sheet, it tells you the main categories are six that we divided into by topics: natural resource data and information, about $4.9 million, and that's really collection of data and information, foundational data that the public can use and natural resource professionals and others can use. And that we as policymakers can use to help guide our decisions so we can understand kind of the state of our natural resources across Minnesota. Land, habitat, and recreation is over $10 million, and that's a lot of acquisition projects in particular. Water resources, $3.45 million, and that's a variety of efforts to research and protect waters. We had a category of aquatic and terrestrial invasive species, $1.47 million, renewable energy projects for $3.36 million, and environmental education. We had a lot of environmental education requests, and so we ended up with 11 of those projects recommended for a total of $2.64 million. And these categories reflect our RFP, correct?
These categories reflect the bill.
The bill. Okay, these reflect the bill. And you can look below that to see what the outcomes are that are related to those categories. I'm going to go through and just really quickly point out the different projects that we're recommending funding. There's a lot of them, so I'll just do it in a very short summary form just for your information, and then we can go into detail about any particular items that you're interested in. First, under the natural resource data and information, and I'm using the summary, the long summary, as my guide to do this, but the bill follows along, if you'd like to follow along in the bill. The county geologic atlases, and this is a long-term project that we have funded both through the LCCMR and through the Clean Water Funds to map our groundwater resources in the state of Minnesota, figure out how much water is there, what condition they're in. Updating the Minnesota Wetlands Inventory Phase 2, so this moves the wetlands inventory to a different part of the state so we can try to map the entire state eventually and see what we have left in wetlands and where we can protect and restore them. Minnesota Breeding Bird Atlas Project, which is a fun project because it's specifically intended to map the birds that we have in our state, but also to make that information broadly and easily accessible and available to the public. And that's something there's a lot of public interest in, working with the Audubon Society. The Bird Conservation Plan for Minnesota is another project through Audubon, which will put a plan together to look at, I mean, we have a number of bird species that people have noticed are in decline, and so this will help us to really map out where we're at with birds. Mitigating pollinator decline in Minnesota, a research project through the University of Minnesota to try to figure out what the impact of certain, I think in general, chemical usage is having on pollinators, like bees and butterflies, I think. Science and innovation from the Sudan Underground Mine Park, a really interesting project that will look at some unique microbes discovered underground. We were talking about the Sudan mine yesterday, and it offers a lot of opportunity for research. So this is a kind of an interesting project. Quantifying carbon burial in wetlands to figure out how to measure and assess the amount of sequestration of carbon, the potential in our wetlands and shallow lakes. Strategic planning for Minnesota's natural and artificial watersheds. Ecosystem services in agricultural watersheds. And this will look specifically at the potential for biofuels markets and other kinds of food crops. And farmland conservation in Minnesota. This is a project that kind of builds upon the discussion we've had in the Green Acres area over the last few years, how to do a better job of protecting ag land, especially in the metropolitan area, in the greater metropolitan area, so that we can preserve some ag land that still remains. And then the next project in this category, the last one, is identifying critical habitats for moose in northeastern Minnesota. In the area of And that was a total of $4.9 million, as I mentioned. In the area of land, habitat, and recreation, we've got the first one is ecological restoration training, and this is to try to make sure we have good and high standards for restoration as we put more and more money through our legacy funds and this environmental trust fund into restoration. We want to make sure we know what those standards should be and that we have the personnel is trained in that. SNA, restoration, enhancement, and acquisition. SNAs are an established program that sets aside land that has unique species in it that are often endangered or threatened. State parkland acquisition, and we chose to fund some priority inholdings and in existing state parks that are popular and that have land available that could fill out some of those park areas. Protection of rare granite rock outcrop ecosystems, and this is something that we visited a couple of years ago, and the LCCMR members were very, very interested in protecting this unique area of rocks and rare species like prickly pear cactus and other kind of amazing plants that you wouldn't expect to see in southwestern Minnesota, and a lot of which will be subject to mining for rock. And so it's threatened in that regard. The Habitat Conservation Partnership Program and the Metropolitan Conservation Corridors are also well-established programs that the LCCMR has supported And this continues some of the good work of those partnerships. And if you look in the bill, you can see the names of all the partners, organizations that these projects involve. There's a lot of partnerships with nonprofits, Ducks Unlimited, Nature Conservancy, et cetera, along with the DNR and other public entities to try to set up corridors for habitat. Conserving sensitive and priority shorelands in Cass County, and this builds upon some research that we funded in previous years to identify in, you know, the area, one of the areas of the state that has some of the most popular recreational lakes and beautiful, pristine lakes, but are being developed rapidly. The research was done to identify which parts of the shoreline are most in need of protection, to protect the water quality, to protect the spawning of fish in those areas, et cetera. And so this builds on that by doing some acquisition of those priority lands. Reconnecting fragmented prairie landscapes, and this builds on a Nature Conservancy project. It's part of their broader project to try to protect threatened prairies, but also to help landowners find ways to conserve prairie land in a way that's economically viable, so to find different markets. Like, I think we looked at ranching with bison and other kinds of opportunities. So there's lots of different I'm not just making that up, am I? I didn't think so. That's what I thought I remembered. And so creative ideas for how to make those kinds of lands profitable for landowners, and so that to help in the process of conservation. The next category of water resources, we have projects that relate to detecting contaminants, detecting sources of different contaminants, and researching how we can mitigate those different kinds of contamination in the waters. The first one relates to endocrine disruptors and pharmaceuticals that are entering surface waters in the Zumbro River watershed. Second one relates to existing runoff that is from previous mining operations up in the St. Louis River Basin area, to try, and I believe this is trying to reduce the methylation of mercury in those waters. Ecological impacts of effluent and surface waters and fish project that we funded some of the previous iterations of these studies with St. Clair University to look at estrogen-related compounds that are polluting waters. Mapleton area project relates to reducing runoff in drainage systems, septic system discharge to lakes, and trying to evaluate what kind of contamination is coming from septic system discharge, evaluation of dioxins in Minnesota lakes and looking at what are the sources of dioxin and what are the concentrations, shallow lake management. I'm going to just zoom through these. Cumulative impacts of shoreline development, and predicting and mitigating vulnerability of trout streams, which looks specifically at the little bugs and invertebrates that the trout eat and how that's connected to the temperature of the streams and the viability of the streams for trout reproduction and thriving trout. The next category that we have is for invasive species, and we funded projects relating to European buckthorn and garlic mustard. A specific project on emerald ash borer that looks at the black ash forest, which is a unique part of Minnesota's ecosystem in northern Minnesota with some black ash swamps, where if there is an invasion of emerald ash borer, it could just, you know, if it removes those trees, it could basically remove those ecosystems from being able to exist, because there's a whole interrelationship there between the trees and the swamps and the unique species that live there. So the university is working with others to do some research on that to see how we can prevent that. Healthy forests, how to build resiliency in forests to resist invasives, and a management for round goby in Lake Superior. In the renewable energy category, we have we fund a project to work on further moving forward on algae for fuels, working with the Met Council. Sustainable biofuels and further measuring impacts of how you manage biofuels to reduce carbon emissions. And that's some research that's being done. Linking habitat restoration to bioenergy and local economies to look at the economics of growing plants for energy usage. And the demonstrating sustainable energy practices at residential environmental learning centers is a project that brings all of the environmental learning centers together. And they had a very ambitious project, and we were able to fund part of it to try to reduce the energy consumption at all of our environmental learning centers, a lot of which are old and leaky and need updating so that they can do energy efficiency improvements and put renewable energy projects, install those on their facilities. Life cycle analysis of options for Minnesota's energy needs is just a study to provide us some baseline information. And then I think the last category is for environmental education, and I'll just mention these briefly. Minnesota Conservation Apprenticeship Academy to help train the next generation of conservation workers. A Will Steger Foundation project to engage students in learning about ecosystems and our climate. Youth connection to nature through digital photography. There's a wilderness inquiry project which takes kids canoeing out on the Mississippi River in big Voyageur canoes, and other ways of getting urban youth out on the Mississippi River. The Urban Woodland Como Regional Park, which will create an urban woodland classroom that will serve many, many urban youth. And I want to acknowledge that we have five residents of the Como Park neighborhood who came to support that project. It's a very grassroots project initiated by active and engaged citizens in Como Park. So I'm really proud that they have brought this project forward. Expanding outdoor classrooms at Minnesota schools with the DNR, integrating environmental outdoor education in K-12 education, and several other projects that just try to build young people's connection with the outdoors, Project Get Outdoors. We have a specific cross-cultural project working with the Hmong community to on fishing, fishing-related culture and skills in the Hmong community, Minnesota Wolfling, and an online Minnesota River project to educate students about water issues on the Minnesota River. So that's a short list. There's a lot there, as you can see, and if you have questions about any of the specific projects, I or Susan Thornton, the executive director of the LCCMR, or anyone, some of the other experts that are here, would be happy to answer them. One thing that's exciting about these projects, I think we're really focused on innovation. The legislature went to a workshop or an all-day seminar last week and heard a lot about the need for innovation in the future to try to be a successful state as we move forward. And there's a lot of information and research and projects here that are very innovative, and they're demonstrating best practices or demonstrating new ways to solve some of our environmental challenges. So there's a lot of really exciting things in here. So I invite you to learn more about them.
I just wanted
to offer the amendment.
Okay, go.
Yeah, the A3 amendment, and then I'm done talking. The A3 amendment is really all just technical changes to the bill that have all been compiled and really quickly.
Excuse me, Senator Anderson. So you are introducing the A3 amendment?
Yes.
Okay.
And I think they're all pretty much just technical changes. The one thing I wanted to mention about the Conservation Corps is that we have to name its successor because its name's been officially changed, and that's not reflected in statute. So we just want to make sure that this goes to the Conservation Corps, whatever their name is.
Right. Senator Anderson has moved the A3 amendment. Is there any discussion? Senator Frederickson.
Mr. Chairman, Senator Anderson, would you look at line 3 on the amendment?
Mm-hmm.
It looks to me like we're inserting the same figure number that we're deleting.
No. There's a zero missing.
Oh.
Yeah, that's what I thought the first time.
It's a trick amendment, right?
You can see, Mr. Chair, Senator Frederickson, okay. We're lucky our staff have eagle eyes and noticed that missing zero.
Other discussion on the A3 amendment? If none, all in favor of the amendment as stated, say aye.
Aye.
Opposed?
Mr. Chair, I think I've told you probably more than you ever wanted to know, and so I'll just leave it at that and see if there's any questions.
Well, Senator Anderson, I was just going to ask you, because you have the unique situation where you're both on the Lasard Sam's Outdoor Council and the LCCMR, and you've got some, obviously you've got some great work that's been done, some great projects. Are you seeing any difficulties with overlap, or in fact, has it been good? Is the complementing been good, or could you comment on it?
Yeah, well, that's a great question, and you know, people ask us a lot from the public. How do these funds interact with each other? How do they work together? And we have, you know, we've made some efforts to reach out to each other as entities, as groups of council members and commission members, and we had one joint meeting to discuss sort of what our different roles are and how we view the mandate that we have by Constitution and law. And I think we can do more to make sure that we're complementing each other's efforts. And the Lasard Council, in general, sees its mission as much narrower and more focused than the LCCMR. And I think we really reinforced that this year when we had our discussions, that our mission is broad and is intended to specifically include research and environmental education and other kinds of broad protection of natural resources, including energy. I mean, that's been a new piece over the last 10 years that the LCCMR has considered a really important part of our natural resource efforts relating to protecting land and water. And we have a lot less money than the Heritage Council does. So we try to do a lot with a smaller amount of money, and I think that means we try to focus on, as I said, on innovation, on demonstrating some new ideas or some best practices so that they can be replicated. Because we don't have enough money in this bill to fund every great idea around the state. I don't know, maybe Senator Frederickson or Senator Vickerman do other members want to try to respond to that?
Well, I was just going to follow up with one little question is do you think that some of the fears that we're hearing, this is just because of your unique situation, about what the Lasard Sam's Council is doing is because they don't know what's going on at the LCCMR?
No, I think people are pretty aware of what each other is doing, and I think our communication lines are strengthening all the time. And I think that's a good thing, to try to coordinate. And, I mean, clean water overlaps all of these areas as well. And so it just makes sense that we build those lines of communication more and try to work together. I mean, we haven't really figured out a process for making sure we're not overlapping or duplicating. In some cases, some of the different constitutional funds have funded similar things, RIM, SNAs. I mean, those are eligible and have been funded by some of the different constitutional funds, and that just shows that there is a lot of overlap.
Okay, good. Senator Frederickson, do you have a comment?
Mr. Chairman, I was just going to add a couple things. For that matter, LCCMR funds Parks and Trails,
yes,
which is also a part of the
right,
legacy. And in fact, you trace the origins of LCMR and LCCMR back to its origins. It started with a mechanism to better fund and take care of our state parks. So that's been a long time focus of the LCCMR. I think another focus of LCCMR that we see as enlarging is the research that we fund in LCCMR, because this is about the only place you can go in environment and natural resources and actually directly fund research that has tremendous potential to perhaps control the invasion of exotic species, to control exotic species once they're here, to do research in what's in our waters, and to do some really good research. And I point out, too, that all the research projects that we select are submitted to a vigorous peer review panel, and our staff spends considerable amount of time assembling a peer review panel to to oversee or to give us recommendations on the research that we do.
Senator Vickerman, do you have a comment?
Well, members, if you look at the one sheet, we tried very hard to treat everybody fair. And if you look where the projects are, they're north, south, east, and west. Some of them are statewide. But we need a plan like this, because I don't think in the other bill they wouldn't have any school watches, they wouldn't have any prairie landscape. There's all kinds of different things. We could have spent $50 million if we'd have had the money. But we tried to be fair, and I think we were fair.
Good.
So I would hope that all of you would vote for this. We move it along, get going. It's really distance from the other ones. But I don't even know what's going on with Lessard. But I do know what's going on here. We spent hours and hours and several days and several miles listening to the public till we got down. I can't remember, Denny, how many was it? A couple hundred projects? How many projects was there, Susan?
240 requests?
Yes.
So the reason I brought that up, you know how hard it is to narrow those down to a few. So we've done the very best we can. I hope all of you would vote for it, move it along quickly.
Thanks, Senator. Senator Perzo, do you have any comment?
Well, I think we give a fair hearing to everybody who comes in, and we figure out exactly how many we can support and fund. Okay. And do prioritize.
Senator Bach.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Senator Anderson, I think Senator Saxog asked the right question about what kind of coordination there is between LCCCMR and the legacy group. But taking it kind of to the next level, is Senator Langseth aware that there's a couple million dollars of state park land acquisition in here? Or he's not providing state land acquisition for the same parcels, is he? I mean, it just seems like... I hope he's aware of that. He's going to be entering conference committee fairly soon here.
Mr. Chair, Senator Buck, absolutely a good question. And, you know, when we had hearings in this division on the bonding requests, we were very cognizant of what was already funded in the LCCMR bill, because this bill was wrapped up and approved before session started. So it does help to have that information available before we do the bonding bill. And the same with the Lessard-Sams bill. That was wrapped up before we started writing the bonding bill. So we know what's there and we know what's missing. And certainly in the state parks, there's a kind of a list of priorities, and we were able to look at some of those last summer for the state parks. And there's some newer ones that Senator Langseth is going to be able to do in the bonding bill, hopefully. So, yeah, I think that's pretty well laid out.
Well, Mr. Chairman, let me just raise my concerns again. And I did send a letter to the LCCMR and to the legacy chairs more than a month ago, probably. I think rather than spend money in the depth of a deep recession, rather than spend money on things like land acquisition, we all know there are tens and tens of millions of dollars in deferred maintenance on state park buildings, on trails all over this state. I really think, as a legislature, we are falling down on our job to try and stimulate this economy when we do things like buy more land, when we have record numbers of Minnesotans out of work. And a couple million dollars would put a lot of people to work, putting new windows in some state park buildings or new shingles on roofs or painting or rehabbing trails. I think we have lost our way. That is why I sent a letter to the chairs of the groups before they assembled their bills. I think we would do the public a much better service and the state budget a much better service by trying to do things to create jobs where we have money to spend. And I'm going to make that speech on the Senate floor, given the opportunity as bills come through that do things like land acquisition at a time when we have 240,000 Minnesotans drawing an unemployment check.
Well, and Mr. Chair, Senator Bach.
Senator Anderson.
I really agree with you. It's unbelievably important. And we had very passionate discussions about that issue during our LCCMR hearings, and I know the members will reinforce that. And I think the legislative members in particular were very sensitive to that issue. And so we had a lot of debate about it. And what we did ask the staff to come up with some estimates on jobs that would be created with this bill. And if you look at this handout that's at your desk now, we separate out about, let's see, roughly, well, less than a third of the money is for more or less straight acquisition. About $6.7 million is for fee title and conservation easement. Now, that represents some jobs, but not the bulk of the jobs. And so separating out the other $19-plus million in this appropriation, I guess that's, what, four-fifths of it, something like that, the staff came up with a conservative estimate of over 200 jobs over 2 to 3 years. And that's a pretty low cost per job if you because it's a 3-year number. That's about $30,000. It's about $90,000, but many of these are for 3 years. And some, you know, we don't know how long each of these jobs last. This is a rough number, and we always get in trouble when we try to put exact numbers on jobs. But these dollars will be putting a lot of Minnesotans to work. And it'll be a range of Minnesotans, from MCC young teenagers who might not be able to get, who is their first real job, you know, building a trail or doing some wetland restoration, all the way up to some ecologists and scientists who will be, and then people in between as well. So there are jobs that will be created through these dollars, and that's as it should be. I think in the bonding recommendations, now, as you all know, the process was informal. We had a lot of hearings. We had 10 and a half hours of hearings in this division on all the bonding requests in this area. And when I carried what I was my best guess as to what the committee would support in terms of recommendations to Senator Langseth. And that was one of the things that I really stressed with Senator Langseth, that we wanted to focus on the job-creating programs and less on acquisition in the bonding bill and more on the restoration programs for that very, very reason. And, you know, and I think that's, some people aren't happy with how the Senate bonding bill ended up because we didn't put quite as much into acquisition of programs like SNAs as we might have in some years, and we put more into things like trail rehabilitation and restoring lands that are out there, because that does translate into jobs. So I think that is really important, and I hope we do that in all of our bills.
Senator Bach.
Well, Mr. Chairman, one of the objections that I hear from time to time about the Vermilion State Park is how can you support creating another state park when we don't have money to maintain the ones we have? People on this table have said that. And now, instead of maintaining the ones we have, we're going to do more land acquisition. You know, let's rehab what we have. I mean, and that's why some people don't want to buy Vermilion, because we're not taking care of what we have. Well, we're not all taking care of what we have right here at this table. I mean, I don't have an amendment today, but I may have one before we're done here. And, you know, I've been on unemployment. I know what it feels like. I was at an event last night, and a woman broke down and cried because her husband hasn't worked for a year. And he is a construction member, and she doesn't know what they're going to do. She doesn't know if they're going to be able to pay their Xcel energy bill this month. That's what's going on out there. And we're buying land? I'm sorry. You know, and two of those inholdings are in my district. But right now, today, in the depth of this recession, it is not a priority to buy some inholdings that are in the park boundary that someday we're going to own. It can wait for a couple of years.
Senator Frederickson, do you have a comment on Senator Box?
Well, Mr. Chairman, I had a couple comments to make. Number one, as Senator Anderson said, excuse me, when we were discussing the package of recommendations this year, we were very cognizant of the jobs that would be created, and we talked about it. And in our request for proposals for the next appropriation cycles are already out,
And one of the criteria that we added this year to that proposal was we said when we evaluate the proposals that we'd be evaluating next summer, the number of jobs created was going to be one of the criteria we're going to be looking at. So, Senator Bach, we have tried to be very sensitive to the number of jobs created and strike a balance between the environment, natural resource needs, and jobs. With state acquisition of state parks, some of these parcels only come up for sale when a family perhaps is getting up in years and they're going to move into assisted living, or they're going to sell the parcel. And it's like a once-in-a-generation opportunity to buy an in-holding that's in a state park. And we feel we don't want to miss that opportunity, because to have private ownership within the state park boundaries that are in-holdings can be a problem for managing the park, can cause other problems for the park. And also citizens ask, well, that property is for sale. Why didn't the state buy it when they had the opportunity rather than let it slip by? So I think for state, and I certainly understand your point, Senator Bach, that we should be spending more on the upkeep and enhancement of what we already have in our state parks. So I concur with that entirely.
And Mr. Chair, I mean, just the one.
Senator Anderson.
One last point on that is that, of course, land prices. This is a good time to acquire land, even though I agree that shouldn't be our number one priority. When you have an opportunity to acquire something that's very unique and very, you know, there's a piece of land, Senator Bach, as you said, in your district, right along Highway 61 by Split Rock Park. You know, I think that's. Is that the most popular state park in Minnesota? It's up there. It's one of the most visited ones, and that will, that won't come around again. It's just like Lake Vermilion. If we don't, some things we just have to make a priority, because if we miss them, we'll never get that chance again. And at least the prices are a little lower now than they might otherwise be.
Senator Bach.
Mr. Chairman, it would be helpful, probably, Senator Anderson, to know, of the five parcels that are listed in here, who owns them? Does a holding company of some kind own them, or are they actually still being owned by a private individual? So, I mean, all of us around this table know there are holding companies that buy these parcels and hold them until the state actually appropriates some bonds to make the purchase.
That's a good question.
Ms. Thornton, do you have a response?
Mr. Chairman, members, Susan Thornton with the LCCMR staff. There are 9 acres in Crow Wing, and let me back up. The Parks and Trails Council, in working with the Department of Natural Resources, the normal process is they will do acquisitions on their priority list as assistants, as members of this committee know. And the Parks and Trails Council currently, my understanding, is holding 9 acres in Crow Wing. That'll be $590,000. 160 acres at Scenic for $340,000, 55 acres at Teteguch for $240,000. The new acquisitions that they are working on, and it's my understanding that these are held by private landowners, but that's my understanding, is 19 acres at Split Rock for $700,000 and 100 acres of William O'Brien for $330,000.
Goodbye.
Mr. Chairman, it appears like more than half the money is in no danger of being sold, no danger of somehow being part of the state park. They've been purchased by a holding company, and I love the Parks and Trails Council. They do good work, but they're not going to turn around. They sold this land to have it included in the park. That's why they bought it. And I think they would understand if we asked them to wait another 2 years before we took it off their hands. But I think there is zero risk that they're going to turn around and sell it somehow for development. And, I mean, I'll say it again. I think they do valuable work for the DNR when the DNR doesn't have some bonding authority to make purchases. But I think we need to be careful that we don't represent this, that somehow an opportunity is going to get by on us and something's going to be sold when it's already been purchased for the purpose of including it in the park, and there's no risk of it being developed. And I don't have anything more to add on it today, except that pretty soon these federal unemployment extensions are going to run out, and we're going to be counting how many people every Friday get their last check, their last one. And then what's going to happen? Are we going to continue buying land when people don't even have unemployment checks anymore.
Senator Hand, did you have a question?
Mr. Chairman. I did want to ask Senator Anderson a little bit about, and I think there was some comment earlier that there were 240 total requests made of the commission, and this was the representation of what made it through that process. And I'd like to understand better, what was the process that the committee went through to determine the priority of these projects and why they were included versus other projects, or just how that prioritization happened? And I'm asking, frankly, because as I'm reading through some of these things, I'm a little bit, and granted, I was not a part of that discussion, but some of these projects seem to me to be pretty low priority, as I understand what the purpose of the funding that we're dealing with is. And I just am curious to know, what was that process in determining what the priorities were, including these specific things in the bill?
Well, Senator Anderson?
Mr. Chair, it's a very extensive process. And first we have an RFP that we jointly pass as a group, develop and pass as a group of, 17 members, 10 legislators, 7 citizen members. And then when we got our first round of, when we got the responses to the RFP, those 240 requests, we have, I didn't bring my notebook, but we have a huge thick notebook like this, and our job as members is to read through every proposal, which, you know, each one can be, you know, 10, 20 pages or at least a few pages of detail. We go through individually and rank our top priorities, and then as a commission we meet in public. All of our meetings are public, and we hash out how many we should have hearings on, and we always end up sort of adding a few more hearings so that we can give more projects an opportunity to come back or come in and make a case. And so how many hearings did we have? 85 projects, which is about a third of those requested, we had hearings on. So that was sort of our top 85 that we agreed to as a ranking. 6 days of 8 to 9 hours. I forgot to mention that Senator Rummel has been sitting in on these hearings very diligently and just watching as an observer, and also attended many of those hours. So 6 hours, long days of, 20 or 30 minutes each for each proposer to come in and give a detailed explanation of their project and who they're working with and how much money they'll leverage and how they will meet the goals of the RFP in their category and how they meet the goals of the Constitution to protect our natural resources. And after that, we go through another round of voting and ranking, and you know, it's a very time-intensive process of working as a collaborative group, and sometimes not so collaborative because we have to vote. You know, sometimes we can't reach those by consensus. We just take votes on, and in the end, that's how we put our package together. So it's kind of a lot like how a committee works.
Senator Hand.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Thank you, Senator Anderson. Your comments, so there was some objective criteria being brought to the projects where members of the committee were asked to evaluate projects against a certain criteria and then give them a score. Is that part of what you're describing? Is that part of the process?
Well,
Senator Anderson.
Yeah, Mr. Chairman, our RFP, we have categories that we invite people to submit proposals under, and we also have some scoring criteria that we list in our RFP. And let's see. For example, it says the criteria for scoring proposals in the RFP, so people know this up front, the 7 criteria, and not in any particular order, are to add to the knowledge base and disseminate information, broad applicability with long-term impacts having statewide or regional significance, innovation, leverage of other funds, measurable and demonstrated outcomes, partnerships, and urgency. And so we all use that as our part of our checklist as we go through and score projects, and then they have to be considered against the categories for funding that we develop in our RFP, which are those areas of water resources, renewable energy related to climate change, habitat restoration, enhancement and acquisition, invasive species, natural resource conservation planning and implementation, environmental education, and creative ideas. And there's more detail within, if you'd like to read those.
Senator Ann.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman, and thank you, Senator Anderson. I guess part of it is I do have a question on a couple of these projects. One, I think it's on page 16 here, the life cycle analysis of options for Minnesota energy needs. And that was pointed out to me as a project that had been put in the bill, I think, last time and got vetoed. And I just wonder what was the criteria that was used to reinsert that project this time into the bill after it had gone through and gotten vetoed in the last attempt to get that project included. Why was that considered a priority?
Well,
Senator Anderson.
Mr. Chair, Senator Hahn. We reinstated that project because we think it's extremely important to understand what the costs and benefits are of energy sources and how to evaluate energy sources based on their carbon emissions. And so this was an evaluation of low-carbon energy technologies and what their true costs are and true benefits are. And that is research and planning information that could be helpful for policymakers as we make policy decisions here at the Capitol about energy policies.
And Mr. Chairman and Senator Anderson, I guess, and I don't know that these projects were in the bill the last time, but there are projects here that deal with fishing to create some program to increase the, I guess, fishing. There's one here for photography, youth photography. Again, I'm not part of the commission, and I did not go through this process, but I find it hard to say that those are priority issues that in terms of what we're trying to accomplish. As I thought this money was to be used to try to enhance the environment and sustain the natural resources of the state, and I just don't understand the connection between putting together a project to fund a program to encourage fishing, for example, or photography meets that criteria.
Well, Mr.
Chair,
Senator Hahn, this committee, Senator Chaudhry's committee, the LCCMR, the Heritage Council have all had extensive discussions about the need to engage young people in the outdoors and to develop a love of nature and to develop a love of our traditions of the outdoors, hunting, fishing, hiking, camping, canoeing, all of those things that we take for granted perhaps in our generation as part of Minnesota's traditions and values and that we see slipping away in the current video game generation. And there's all kinds of research that's been done about what the implications are for young people and how they're disconnected from the outdoors. And we know that the numbers of people hunting and fishing in Minnesota is slipping. And so all of those all the groups that are affiliated with those kinds of traditions are also very, very concerned about trying to increase participation and trying to expose young people to those traditions and to develop that love and passion for the outdoors. And that's a big part of what environmental education is, and that's part of our mission at the LCCMR to educate and engage our citizens in our natural resources. And that's why we focus on environmental education at the commission. I don't know if any other commissioners.
Senator Anderson, my wife and I were on the Gunflint Trail hunting this weekend for moose with a camera. So that's how you get the photography.
Well, and Mr. Chairman, I don't dispute that there is there are people who like to take pictures of wildlife. I get that. I think that's a wonderful thing. I'm just reading through these things and trying to say, here we are, we've got a tough economic climate, and we're going to spend money. And we're going to spend money, and we prioritize projects and say these are high-priority projects. And Senator Anderson, you mentioned some of the criteria about measurability and some sort of objective way to say that there's going to be something to show for this investment. And I just don't see the connection. Some of these things might be wonderful things. It might be great to get kids out fishing. How does that translate into how are you going to measure that? How is that going to be looked at and say, well, gee, we invested this money, and at the end of the day, it resulted in something. I don't know how you measure those things. I just, as I'm looking at the specifics in the bill, there are things I think are clearly wonderful things, but others I just don't understand what the criteria were that were brought to these and why they were considered high priority, given the fact that we, I think, are trying to be in a position where we want things to be prioritized. And so I'm confessing I'm not seeing it at this point in a lot of these projects.
Mr. Chair, I just want to invite you, Senator Hand, to read the work programs that are developed for each one of these projects that follow through on what we heard and set requirements for what the outcomes are, how we will measure the results, what the specific budgets are, how many children will be reached by these, for example, whatever it is. That information is in their work program, and it's available online to the public, and we can certainly provide it to you as well.
Well, and Mr. Chairman,
yes,
Senator, thank you, and I'd be happy to look at that. I also looked at some information that looked at the rankings for these projects, and some of these, you had some sort of scoring mechanism, and some of them were scored very low. And so that's part of my question about the prioritization, is that as the ranking and the scoring of these things was looked at, some of these that are in the bill were not scored very highly compared to other projects. And there are some of the ones that I've been asking about. So I'm just not sure if I understand how this process was derived and how these priorities were reached. But I don't see them, and I think I've got some real questions about the bill.
Well, Mr. Chair, just one last comment. This is called democracy, and it's not one person making a score sheet and saying we're going to fund the top 10 projects. It's a collaborative process, and we have a lot of people who have a lot of knowledge, a lot of expertise. We have citizen members who bring a great deal of background and expertise to the table, and legislators who bring a lot of background and expertise. And what we bring on behalf of our constituents, the concerns that our constituents bring to us, our knowledge of our regions of the state, and it's a give and take. That's the democratic process. So it's not just a numerical exercise. It's a discussion. It's a deliberation, and it's the democratic process. And I think because we had so many projects, to me that helps to really reinforce my view that we came up with the best ones through the process of give and take and evaluation and a hard look. And, sometimes you rank a project low and then you have a hearing and you think, wow, that's awesome. Sometimes you rank a project high and you have a hearing and you say, that doesn't look quite as good as I thought it would. And so it's an iterative process, and, I think it's we spend a lot more time coming up with these recommendations than often the legislative committees are able to do. So I think I would stand by the process.
Well, and Mr. Chairman, I'd make one last comment as well. I think that there ought to be some rigor and some standards and some objective evaluation brought to these projects. And you did mention there are some criteria in the RFPs and so forth. But when you are going to rank projects from, say, 1 to 10, and you have a group of people doing that, and the cumulative score is 4, why would you put that as a high priority? And I think there are things like that that have gone through that process and got a relatively low ranking in terms of priority, and they're in the bill. And I just question that process. If that's what the process results in, then I would question the validity of the process. That's all. I just think that some of these projects, to me, do not seem very high priority, do not seem to be well related to the goals that we've, I think, as a state, tried to establish. And I'm not going to get on the committee, obviously, but I'm not happy, I guess, with the way these things have ended up in the bill, and I think there are things in it that shouldn't be. So that's it.
Senator Torres-Ray.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Senator Anderson, I do appreciate the balance that you bring to this proposal and what the committee has done and the staff has done, because I really believe, I obviously think that thinking about jobs is very important. But for you, as the chair of our Environment Committee, you are charged with helping us do a balancing here, and our job is to protect the waters and parks and trails and habitat. We must do that. We must do that. And so I really appreciate that you're moving us in that direction, because you must. You are our chair. I do have a question related to the 20% allocation for data and information. I strongly believe that we, as policymakers, really need to move in a direction of getting this information and figuring out how do we make decisions that are short-term and long-term, and to do that, we need information. But one thing that I've learned through social service, which is where I have more experience, is that we have invested a lot of resources in trying to get the data about, you know, in my case was children in out-of-home placement and all that. And we knew that a lot of those programs were not working for children, but yet we didn't do anything about it and kept collecting information and yet we knew more. So what do you think? My question is, do we have a system in place right now that help us track the information and overlap? Because we did, you know, with the legacy fund, we also allocated some money to do some mapping and to collect some data. And what can we do, or what are we doing right now, in order to make sure that all of these organizations that are collecting the information know about each other? And also that when we have that information, are we going to use that information? Is there a provision in here that says, when we collect this information, are they supposed to come to the legislature to say, this is what we are learning about, you know, if we map wetlands, what we are learning is that in this corner of the state, we are having a problem. We are losing wetlands, and we're not doing enough to repair. Are there specific provisions when we collect data and information that says, well, once we know it, this is the intent, that this is what we're going to do with that information.
Senator Anderson.
Mr. Chair, Senator Torres-Ferre, all of the information is for the public benefit. And so it's all needs to be available and accessible to the public in some way. And I would love it if we could spend more time reviewing all the outcomes that we get. I mean, we review the results of our research that we pay for oftentimes. And, you know, being on this commission is one of the best educations I've ever had. I mean, I think we should all get a master's degree just from serving on it. And I mean that with all seriousness, because we're learning what the latest peer-reviewed science is telling us about critical natural resource issues. And it would be fantastic if the whole legislature was able to take advantage of that information. It's really just a matter of putting the time into doing that. But a lot of the information it's critically usable in many different settings. I mean, we've had a lot of discussion about our water use. What's sustainable? How much water use is sustainable? And we don't even know how much groundwater we have in Minnesota. We don't know where it is. We don't know how high the levels are in different parts of the state. We talk about industrial or ethanol use of water has become a hot button issue, and we don't even know how much is out there. So the Geologic Atlas is one of the ways we've been trying to finish that mapping of Minnesota, and we've been doing a little bit each year, so we know what is the status of our groundwater. We can't make policy without that kind of information. So that's just one example. I don't know if I'm really answering your question. Is there anything else you would add to that? Access?
Senator Torres-Ray?
Mr. Chairman and Senator Anderson, I do understand, and it is precisely because of what you just said, that I think it's necessary that you put together the recommendations that go with that knowledge. What happens frequently is that few people will know about the existence of this information, and few people will know what to do, and few people, so the choir are always in tune with what's going on. The choir is here telling us what to do, and the rest of us are completely unaware. As a result of that, we need to have policies in place that are very clear as to what the choir needs to do with that information. Because if you know, if the staff knows, and then those who are supportive of it know, well, that's very good. And yet, what do we do with it? And so I think that it is very important that when we fund these projects, we have a specific language associated with them that says the purpose of this is not only to know and to make that information available to those who care about it, but it is also to figure out how do we use that, interpret that, and then submit recommendations, legislative recommendations, to address the possible problems, enhance, you know, the great things that we have. And so I think that we need to be a little bit more proactive and more forceful in that direction, because it can be left to, well, the public knows. The public, it is my opinion that the public often do not know, and then we engage here in these conversations as to, well, this is right, no, this is not, this is a priority, no, that is not. And I think that's what we need to do more of. So that's what I'd like to know.
I think Nancy, yes. Senator Vickerman?
Well, I just want to, I'm all for creating jobs. But there's another part in this world. Young kids are really not looking for jobs. Those young kids are looking for environmental stewardship learning, wilderness, youth outdoor wilderness, classrooms. I grew up in an area where I could go any place I wanted to, and I gave this speech yesterday. I'm going to give it again today. You can't do that nowadays. My grandkids have a probably not even as big as this room out in front of their house to enjoy nature like I had. So, and I agree with Bach, we need to create jobs, but I want to leave this world knowing that we've done something for a young generation that can enjoy things that we enjoy. There's algae research in there. That's not going to be in that other bill. Bill Stigler's got his climate change. Now, we spend a lot of hours on this. In fact, sometimes you wonder how much more time you can spend on killing something. This went on and on and on we went. We left bus trips overnight. That's not fun. But the end result, I think, is this. And I still think everybody in this committee should vote this. Nancy, you're the new one that just, well, you're not new one, but you got reappointed again. And I'm sure that you, I know you were part of running this operation.
Thank you.
You have a comment, Ms. Gibson?
Yes, I do. Thank you. My name is Nancy Gibson, and I am one of the co-chairs of the LCCMR. I'm the citizen part of it. And just a couple comments I wanted to add to your comment. We have been financing the County Biological Survey for many, many cycles, and they are responsible for finding some of these rare gems that we have in Minnesota. And the granite outcropping project is a great example of where we took that information. They brought it to us. They give us this information. Then we can act on it. And there are several projects like that in here. And I understand your concern that the public doesn't have this, but with the new technology age, they do have this through websites. And I've talked to city managers. I remember when we went down to Winona, the manager was saying, please give me this information so that we have this information for the bluffs. What's up there that we can save? Give me the ammunition that we need to do this. So there are some incredible data resources that we have in this state, unlike many other states, that we are actually putting to action, which I think is great. Thank you.
And, Mr. Chair,
Senator,
I know Senator Rummel and Senator Torres Ray are very, they're thinking about how, in the big picture, how we can use research and data to drive better decision-making by policymakers. And they're thinking about that in other areas, like education. And we can't really answer that here in this bill, but that is, it's a critically important question, and I would love to figure out how we can do a better job of letting the, you know, we have the whole University of Minnesota is doing all kinds of research that we don't know anything about, and we should have that in front of us when we make decisions that relate to science and natural resources and our environment. And so that's a really big, compelling question. I don't have an answer to it today, but I'm really glad you brought it up. And I think we're contributing to that body of knowledge, though, because we're kind of linking a lot of that pure research with the public policy questions of our day that we're seeing in the legislature and we're and practitioners see in the field and in the areas of work that they bring from the citizen members. I mean, what are the critical areas that we need more research on and more information on? That's what we're trying to provide. And I guess I'll just conclude by just reminding everyone, and we all know this, but, you know, the voters of Minnesota in their wisdom said, even in times of high unemployment, even in times when we have negative money in our state budget, they wanted us to set aside some funds to protect our natural resources and to make those a priority year after year after year. And we know that if they hadn't done that, we wouldn't be funding this stuff in our state budget this year, absolutely. But it was the people of Minnesota has said when they set this money aside, the Environmental Trust Fund aside in the Constitution and the legacy funds in the Constitution, this is what makes Minnesota strong, too. Not just the jobs and not just education and health care, but our natural environment, and we want to protect it. And that's what this is all about.
Okay, does the committee have any additional questions, any other discussion, any other testimony from the public? If not, Senator Anderson, what would you have us do?
I would, Mr. Chair. Thank you. I would like to move that Senate File 2462 as amended be referred to the full Committee on Finance.
Okay. Senator Anderson moved the Senate File 2462 as amended be recommended to pass and sent to the Committee on Finance. Okay. Is there any discussion with the committee? If not, all in favor, signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Opposed?
No.
It will be on its way to the Senator Perezo.
Chairman, I think that we should ask someone from DNR to come up to the table and help. They have some information they might want to share with us about some of the points we've already discussed here today.
All right. Well, the bill has passed, but we certainly can have discussion. Mr. Commissioner Meyer, do you want to come up and make a comment?
Thanks. Mr. Chair, this is on the LCCMR bill. You're asking for comment?
Yes. Senator Perezo, is that correct?
Okay. I think that's what she's asking.
Mr. Chair, members, for the record, Bob Meyer, Department of Natural Resources Assistant Commissioner. We did work very closely with the commission and all of its members this session on putting the proposals together. However, there was one piece that we came up with that was after the process had gone through that is in the governor's budget that was released yesterday, which would establish a revolving loan fund for public land or for private landowners for emerald ash borer removal. I spoke with some people about this. I think that's what Senator Perezo wanted me to address. And we do apologize for not having this as a proposal to move forward with, but the urgency of funding for private landowners and emerald ash borer removal has come to our attention. The bond dollars can only be used on public land, so we have a proposal that you'll see before you. And we didn't have an amendment for today just because of the release of the budget, but it's something we hope we can discuss as this bill moves forward, and if not this year, into the future for next year as well, trying to identify a source of funding for private landowners to deal with this problem that they're facing.
Senator Fredrickson.
Mr. Chairman, Mr. Meyer, how large an amount of monies are you looking at for establishing this revolving loan fund?
Mr. Chair, Senator Fredrickson, our proposal at this time is for $1 million, which would be redeposited back into the trust fund after a period of time. We're looking at 10 years in the language we have. It certainly could be longer or shorter than that for low interest or no interest loans to local units of government to provide that funding to the private landowner. Of course, any amount of funding would be helpful as we deal with this important issue, but we started off with $1 million. We don't have a list of proposals not to fund at this point in time, but I just wanted to make sure that got on everybody's radar screen, and I apologize for the tardiness of the message.
Other questions? Senator Perezol, thank you for bringing that
it's
forward.
It's an important thing that we've got
so. I think it is.
Rampant before we know it.
All right. So,
Mr. Chair and members.
Senator Anderson, are you going to
You
want to
keep
adjourn?
Going for? Oh no,
we're going to do parks and trails.
We're going to talk. We're going to continue on. And I guess Senator Torres Ray, do you want to? I think we're going to reconvene as a subcommittee. Well, we can just do it as the full committee. No.
Yes? Senator Torres Ray, why don't you come up? Senator Anderson, Senator Torres Ray,
wanted to continue the review of the parks and trails funding that we had to postpone last. And so we just invite the whole committee to listen on this. But this was originally started by Senator Torres Ray's subcommittee, and we ran out of time last week. So we'll just continue with that agenda. Thank you very much.
Did we vote on this?
We voted on it.